You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur with the Innovation for Alpha podcast, and I'm joined by my colleague, Mike Szymanski, and we are coming at you in advance of the Healthcare Impact Investing Summit that AngelMD is hosting on July 13th, and we're really pleased today to be joined by Steve Porter, who is leading a company called RiskLD, and he's going to tell us a little about the company. We're going to talk about what the company is doing to really have an impact in the marketplace. And then we'll talk more broadly about some of the background. And I'm going to turn it over to Mike and let Mike lead the questions. Mike?
Thanks a lot, Tobin. Appreciate it. So I met Steve last fall when he was presenting at our pitch club about OBGYN pediatrics issues. And I was really impressed about his company, not only because of what it did, but why it was doing it and how it was managing to make a real difference. So with that, I'm just going to let's talk a little bit about the company itself, Steve. So now RiskLD, I'm going to go ahead and share some slides for everyone. RiskLD was built to create better outcomes because there's a huge disparity in maternal health during labor. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
That's exactly right, Mike. So if we advance to the next slide, we've got a couple of interrelated problems. The first is that here in the United States, we actually have the highest maternal mortality rate of any industrialized nation. So let's think about that for a moment. With all we spend in healthcare and the outcomes that we achieve in other clinical areas, we have the highest maternal mortality rate of any industrialized nation. But when we break that problem down by the numbers, a couple really disturbing statistics emerge. The first, we know that the majority, over 60% of pregnancy-related deaths, are preventable. And a subset of these preventable deaths relate to errors that happen on labor and delivery units. And that's the piece of this problem that our software is really tackling, to improve outcomes for women when they arrive in the hospital to deliver their babies, to optimize care during that inpatient episode.
Gotcha. Now, the thing is, Steve, this has not been a new topic. I mean, ever since data-driven medicine became a hot-button issue in healthcare systems or insurance systems, we've been highlighting the aspects of the maternal health rate or maternal mortality in the United States. So what's been happening?
So a couple of things are happening. Our systems that we use on labor and delivery are really antiquated. And there are a couple interrelated problems. We have disaggregated systems, one system that monitors the baby, the fetal monitoring system, and a separate system, the electronic health record, that houses all of information about mom. These systems often don't talk to each other and don't present complete consolidated information on both mom and baby.
So with the result, I know this was a statistic that drove me crazy when you showed me. As a result, we see that nothing's been happening. We've been working on this problem for 20 years and it's been getting worse.
That's right.
It's all driven off of this.
Relative to all of our peer nations, that we are going in the wrong direction.
That's incredible. So tell me a little bit about then how you do integrate these systems. What is it RiskLD does, so to speak?
Sure. So at the highest level, what RiskLD does, it's a software application that integrates with the inpatient electronic health record and provides a combination of early warning and clinical decision support at the point of care on labor and delivery. And so I'll talk to you a little bit about why we designed the software in the way that we did. It turns out that errors on labor and delivery units are the result of really one of two factors. The first is what we call a lack of situational awareness, which basically means that the clinical team was not aware of a problem until it was too late. The team was never aware of that fever or those elevated blood pressures or the issues that the baby was having tolerating labor. So that's the first problem, lack of situational awareness. The second problem is once a critical patient issue has been identified, not managing patients based on evidence-based best practices. So at the risk of oversimplifying this, why do bad outcomes happen on labor and delivery units specifically? Mm-hmm. Either we didn't know about the problem or we didn't manage it effectively. So we designed a software that tackles all aspects of this problem. It integrates with an electronic health record in just four things. It monitors mom and baby continuously, and that monitoring starts from the moment the patient arrives on labor and delivery until the mom is discharged from the postpartum ward, typically 2 or 3 days after delivery. The system will suggest diagnoses to consider in real time, high-risk conditions like preterm labor or preeclampsia. It will push alerts to the clinical team, and lastly, it will issue real-time, evidence-based clinical decision support for how to manage the condition.
So big concerns are always about how this works into the standard operating room workflow. Like, how does this working into the labor suite?
Right. So the first point is that it doesn't require the clinician to do any additional work. So this is a read-only interface that essentially is solving for one of the key pain points on labor and delivery, the disaggregation of information that makes it easy to sometimes miss key problems and miss critical diagnoses. This is extracting over 130 different data feeds from the inpatient EMR, running them through our rules engine, and then based on that, suggesting diagnoses to consider. But it's a read-only interface. So there's no write back to the EMR. There's no additional charting, no additional work. Mm-hmm. Really what it's doing, it's facilitating communication and decision-making. It's making it easier for nurses and physicians and nurse midwives to do what they do every day.
Got it. So how is it that you came up with this in the first place? Like, what highlighted the fact that this was a problem that needed to be addressed? And how does that fit in with existing movements towards this? So as I mentioned, this has been a known issue for 20 years, and yet we've been making no traction.
Right. So this software was actually spun out of the Obstetric Quality and Patient Safety Unit at University Hospitals in Cleveland. And as part of my clinical work as an obstetrician gynecologist, I sit on our quality assurance committee. And part of what we do, we review cases where there have been adverse outcomes for mom or baby. What we realized over the past decade of doing this work is that these bad outcomes are the result of errors, systems level errors, either lack of situational awareness or not managing problems appropriately.
Right.
But years ago, we had searched for commercially available solutions, technologies that we could deploy on our labor and delivery units that would empower our clinicians to address and mitigate these sources of error. Long story short, was that we didn't find anything. So we ended up designing it ourselves, and that's what we're commercializing as RiskLD.
Got it. So as part of designing that, I assume that you were involved with a lot of other groups as well, all pushing towards these outcomes. Could you talk a little bit about that, whether it's policy, health, or even politically driven?
Absolutely. There's tremendous political momentum on this issue at the moment. Beginning last March with the introduction of the Black Maternal Health Momnibus, which is a combination of 10 different interrelated bills that are all focused on improving maternal health outcomes and reducing racial disparities in maternal health outcomes. Now, one of those bills is called the Tech to Save Moms Bill, and we at RiskLD had the opportunity to work with the legislative aides that were drafting this legislation early on. And one of the things we noted was that there was a lot of mention around the use of technology to measure the problem of maternal morbidity and mortality, but not enough language around the use of technology as part of the solution to the problem. So we worked with these legislative aides to include expanded language in the Tech to Save Moms Bill around the importance of early alerting systems, clinical decision support systems, and remote monitoring tools to put these solutions in the hands of clinicians that are working on the front lines on labor and delivery units to improve the quality of care that they deliver. I'm pleased to say that the Momnibus was reintroduced in February of this year. And separate from that, Tech to Save Moms was introduced in April as a standalone piece of legislation, a bipartisan effort between Senator Menendez in New Jersey and Senator Sullivan from Alaska.
Got it. But one of the things that maybe you didn't highlight as much, but I certainly heard, was that there wasn't enough focus on the actual use case in the labor suite, that people were speaking so much about measuring the outcomes, but not about changing the outcomes via some direct measure. So what would you say about the fact that hands-on clinician experience was critical in the development of this product and of a solution to promote to policymakers in the first place?
Well, you know, in healthcare, we see a lot of solutions that are designed by software engineers, not necessarily designed by clinicians. That's part of what we were dissatisfied with currently available technologies, because they didn't meet our needs. It was clear that we were going to have to design our own with the input of obstetric nurses and obstetric providers. Having that input was key to designing this, because we know how we want information packaged. We know how we want it to be displayed. We then round that out with the advocacy work, with convincing legislators of the importance of providing government support for these kinds of technologies. Bear in mind that 43% of births in the United States are already paid for by Medicaid. So it's important that the federal government support hospitals that wish to deploy safety solutions such as ours.
Got it. So you're suggesting that maybe doctors should be writing medical regulations and not legislators and lawyers?
At least
that might be a good idea for us to just try it out a little bit, or at least bring them into the room when they're writing them.
Correct. At least providing critical input.
Right. So let's at least include them in the conversation for a change. Try it out. See how it works, right?
That's right. That's right. Although I do have to, the tremendous work that's coming out of Congresswoman Lauren Underwood's office in leading this effort, and working with her office and her policy directors has been an absolute privilege.
What a refreshing thing to say, that you enjoy working with some politicians and legislation writers and someone. So somebody out there is doing a good job. That's good to know.
Absolutely.
Well, and kudos to them.
Congresswoman Underwood is herself a nurse by training. So she comes from her background.
There's your answer. That's the key, right? Now we know what's going on. All right. Very good. Now, one of the things that I noticed one of the times when we were talking about this is that this is not just a race-based issue, that in fact, this also has implications mostly with the quality of care or efficiency of care that's being provided in the first place. And that the fact is, many of our minority communities are underserved in terms of healthcare access, but they're not the only communities that are underserved. Is that right?
That's exactly right. You know, part of what our software platform aims to achieve is, regardless what a woman's journey has been during the course of her pregnancy, from the moment she arrives on the labor and delivery unit for that inpatient episode of care, she is entitled to the same high standard of care. Now, we know that women of color in the United States have worse pregnancy outcomes. Women of color in the United States are 3 to 4 times more likely to die during the course of their pregnancies than their white counterparts. But there are other drivers of adverse maternal health outcomes, specifically access to care. When you look at the availability of obstetric services in rural areas, this really interesting statistic that 60% of births in the United States are at hospitals that do fewer than 3 deliveries per day. So most deliveries are actually occurring at these super low volume hospitals. And there's this idea that it is hard to get good when you're doing something so infrequently. What you really need in those settings is this technology backstop of support. So if you are a family medicine practitioner that's doing deliveries at a critical access hospital, you might not be trained to recognize an atypical presentation of preeclampsia. You certainly might not be trained to manage it, but our software provides that technology backstop of support so that that diagnosis doesn't get missed.
I see. And are there centralized centers where a human being sits there? Is this entirely AI-based? Like, how is the decision-making being made?
So the idea is that would be from these centralized command centers that we'd be staffed either by physicians or by advanced practice nurses who would essentially read the outputs of our software, would read the alerts, and then place calls to the physicians or nurses that are on site at these critical access hospitals to ensure that the diagnosis has been recognized, it's being managed appropriately, in some cases to facilitate transfer of the patient to a higher level of care if it's deemed that a patient really needs care at a tertiary or quaternary referral center.
Steve, I'm just curious too, when you look at those 60% of the hospitals that are not doing a lot of volume, and then you overlay, are there specific types of adverse events? You know, like if you took the top three, do you wipe out 90%? Or what does that look like in terms of the spread? Is it really a lot of different things, or is it just a handful of things?
It's a great question. I think it depends a little bit on the environment in which you're operating in terms of the specific morbidity in that specific context. Overall, when we look at nationally at drivers of maternal morbidity and mortality, we're looking at cardiovascular disease, hypertensive disorders of pregnancy, and obstetric hemorrhage. Now, these are conditions that, when recognized and managed appropriately, we can mitigate the risk associated with these conditions. But it's about recognizing the problem as it's developing and managing it appropriately.
Got it. Excellent. And from what I can see, it's actually had some positive outcomes. It works, so to speak.
That's right. So the algorithms underpinning our software are based on a series of clinical practice guidelines. Now, these are paper-based protocols that were deployed by the obstetric team at University Hospitals here in Cleveland. What they found was that after introducing standardized care pathways to essentially harmonize how care is delivered on the labor and delivery units, they were able to reduce dramatically the rate of serious safety events. That's a composite measure of adverse maternal or neonatal outcomes. So a bad outcome for a mom or a baby would feed into this calculation. What they have seen is since they've introduced these standardized care pathways, they've seen a dramatic but also sustained reduction in the rate of these serious safety events happening. What we have done is we've taken these standardized care pathways and we've embedded them into software so that we can bring them to scale.
Got it. Great for the moms, great for the babies. Also not so bad for the cost of the healthcare system itself, right?
That's right. So this is a graph that's looking at obstetric litigation costs incurred by the university hospital system. What they saw was that since this quality work began in earnest, they brought that down from a peak of $16 million in 2010 to at or below $1 million for the last five years running. And those are losses that directly hit the hospital's bottom line because it's a self-insured system. By delivering better clinical outcomes, then they were able to reduce the number of claims and reduce their litigation spend dramatically.
Got it. Now, I'm actually going to stop sharing for a moment so we can just talk about us. One of the things that came up when you were at our pitch club last fall is I know you were in the process of raising funds, as all small entrepreneurs do, startups do. But you've been in the game for quite a while. I mean, the product had been there for years, right? Like when did you launch and have your first viable product in market? 2018, 2019?
So we went live at University Hospitals in January of 2019. And then about 6 months later, our software was approved as an application in Epic's App Orchard, which is their app store that allows basically any hospital that runs on Epic to download our software. So that happened in May of 2020. Now, the problem was 2020 was a very challenging year to be selling into hospital systems. Hospitals were a little bit distracted.
Right.
But so that was really what our needs were as an early stage company. We had a commercial grade software. Our application was approved in Epic App Store, and we were looking for customers. We were looking for demonstration sites. We needed reference accounts.
That's what I wanted to get at. It's like you were looking to raise money, but in reality, what you needed were customers. In every step of the way, the money was in order to extend your runway in order to acquire those customers. But at the end of the day, it was the customers that mattered. It was visibility. It was your ability to get attention, your ability to validate your product.
That's exactly right. You know, in fact, we had a very early conversation with a healthcare improvement company that does consulting advisory, provides consulting and advisory systems to hospitals across the country. We provided them with an early demo of our software and they said, "We love it. We love what you do. You need to get this stood up at 5 hospitals. We can take you from 5 to 50, right? But you need to do that hard work of getting to 5 hospitals." So this was a very early conversation where there was talk about how, the inflection point at which they might be interested in acquiring us, but we needed to prove it out at those early customers.
And what did you find? Let me just ask on that point, Steve. What did you find? I mean, as you mentioned, it was a tough year last year. But if you can potentially filter out some of the noise related to that, what were the friction points? You know, what do you anticipate in terms of sales cycles to get, you know, further penetration?
Sure. I think a couple of points. I think in talking to hospitals about a new technology, no hospital wants to be number one. Everyone wants to be number 2 or 3, but no one really wants to be number 1 because they want someone else to sort of work out the kinks, right? And have a sort of nice polished iron product. The second part is that kind of across the board, hospital IT systems are I think, wary of taking on anything that is perceived to be a strain or a drain on their resources. So part of our challenge was to convince these IT departments that because it's effectively downloadable from Epic's App Store, this ends up being a 2 to 4 week period of configuration where you have a 4 or 5 person team that's working on it part-time for a matter of weeks, and then it's done, as opposed to what they might be expecting from enterprise software, which would be a 6 to 12 month integration process that consumes a lot of resources.
Got it. And have you been getting traction there in terms of convincing people that you can get in there? How's that looking?
It depends a little bit on the familiarity that the customer has with the App Orchard. Some are quite familiar with it, have done multiple installations. And when we describe what's required and sort of share our implementation roadmap, it's kind of a no-brainer for them, right? They know that it's going to be not a heavy lift.
Might that suggest that Epic themselves has a bit of a hurdle to overcome in terms of convincing their own user base of the validity or viability of their app system?
I think that's fair. I have to say that they've been a great partner with in approving our software and working with our hospital customers. But I think that's a fair point to make more all of their customers aware that these applications are out there and they're available for download. Judy Faulkner has said that she wants to shave it down to a 3-day long integration process, right? Not as seamless as downloading an app to our phone, but pretty close, all right? But game-changing in the landscape of healthcare IT.
Yeah, that's what things to me. It's like, if you could literally download a new app into your hospital system in the space of a week, what would that mean for adoption of life-changing technologies and other types of IT-based systems, right?
Correct. Well, and I think that has historically been a barrier to innovation in this B2B segment of healthcare, mm-hmm. Because it's so easy to design an app that a patient or a consumer engagement app that a patient's going to download to his or her phone, right? There's low barriers to entry to that. Historically, there have been higher barriers to entry to selling into a hospital because of the challenges that we've been discussing. I'm hopeful that this app store model will resolve some of those.
I'm just curious on the pricing, Steve. What have you arrived at in terms of the pricing for the product? Is it a subscription? Is it based on certain metrics? How do you see that moving forward?
So it tends to be based on delivery volumes, because basically we are processing over 130 data feeds on every patient that is run through our system. So it's information about the patient's past medical and obstetric history, every vital sign during the course of her admission, any lab that's resulted, any medication she's on. It's a whole lot of data that we are accessing and processing for each individual patient. So we did think it was appropriate to link the pricing of the software to the delivery volumes at the client.
Fair enough.
Is there any indication of rolling this out to other indications? Is there any chance of rolling this out to other indications outside of labor and delivery? Seems like a standardized care system would be useful in many different places.
Absolutely. It's a great question. It's one that we get asked a lot. I mean, I have colleagues in neurology, right? How useful would this be in sort of stroke monitoring? In the cardiovascular space, you could imagine so many different applications for this. And actually, the patent that protects our software, it really is a broad-ranging patent that speaks to a graphical user interface that's used to depict healthcare trends in patient data over time. It doesn't mention obstetrics specifically. We have decided to focus, at least upfront, exclusively on obstetrics because we think there is such a strong use case in this area. There is a public health crisis. We understand what the drivers are of these problems in terms of errors that happen on labor and delivery, and we have a solution that's really fit for purpose. So in the near term, our focus is going to be there.
There's also a big data use here issue. I mean, you mentioned all the data that you're collecting. Imagine if this had been all collected on across COVID patients in order to normalize care in early days to understand exactly where the microthrombosis was coming from or the cytokine storm impacts and to improve care.
And particularly valuable in obstetrics, Mike, because remember, pregnant women are often the first to be excluded from any clinical trial. If you are enrolling patients in a clinical trial, the first question you're typically asking is, are you pregnant? Are you thinking about becoming pregnant? Right. So there is a dearth of level one evidence of sort of randomized controlled trial generated evidence on some of our key obstetric conditions. You take preeclampsia, for instance, right. You know, that up to a third of patients will only get preeclampsia in the postpartum period after they've delivered the baby. But why? What is it specific? What combination of medical comorbidities of genetics would help us be able to better predict that and risk stratify so that we could intervene in the subset that we know is more likely to develop that condition?
Steve, can you talk just a little bit about what's next? As you guys have accomplished a lot over the last year, let's just hit on the balance of 2021. What are your primary goals? And then maybe even looking just a little bit further ahead than that.
Sure. So the balance of this year, we are laser focused on implementations. So in addition to our existing implementation in the University Hospital System, which is a network of five hospitals, we have a pilot that's about to launch in the East Bay of San Francisco, a little bit south of us in Ohio. Some other pilots planned in the northern part of New Jersey and right outside of DC. So a lot of excitement for this solution, because if you talk to hospitals, this is a clear need for hospitals, right? Mm-hmm. Labor and delivery is an essential service. Improving outcomes in labor and delivery is sort of a universal mandate. So we are laser focused on getting those implementations up and running and keeping our customers happy.
That's fantastic. And you, as you execute on those, you know, you'll be able to parlay those into you know, a lot from there. You know, as you get out a little, just a little bit further, are you simultaneously, you know, continuing to mine the pipeline for the next set of clients? Are you, you know, is product refinements a key piece? What are the other focuses beyond executing on these clients?
Absolutely. So we're always focused on building our pipeline. In fact, we're already talking to customers that are interested in a 2022 implementation, because we feel like we're actually pretty, you know, pretty set for 2021 in terms of sort of what we can deliver. We're still doing a lot of work on the advocacy and legislation front, working to ensure that aspects of the Black Maternal Health Momnibus and aspects of the Tech to Save Moms bill specifically will get included in either future reconciliation bills or in future appropriations, with the goal, again, of providing government support for hospitals who want to install perinatal safety solutions like ours, given that over 40% of births in the U.S. are already paid for by the government.
Yeah, and given that the poorest hospitals are those that need the assistance the most in terms of improving their maternal outcomes.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, Mike, do you want to shift just a little bit in our final minutes? Because I know Steve's got schedule to keep. Talk a little bit about the Impact Summit, and sure. You know, obviously there's some obvious implications as to why we think this company is a great fit, but maybe kind of go down that path a little bit.
Absolutely. So, you know, like I mentioned, I met Steve and Risk LD during prep for his Pitch Club appearance last fall, and struck by just the way that problems needed to be solved, and yet the very important problems that they were trying to solve in society. Steve, while special, is not unique. There have been a large number of other companies that came down that same pathway where, much like Steve, what he really needed was one customer or two customers or five, as the case may be, or a clinical trial partner or visibility or education in terms of educating doctors what best practices were, and that this was the implementation of that in order to change workflow practices and overcome the hurdles to adoption. There are so many of these types of things. And then when you look at what the problems are in our healthcare system or in society, and you realize that the solutions exist, but some of the companies that are specifically trying to solve those problems are those that need our assistance the most. It feels very karmically appropriate to try to get as many of these stakeholders across the healthcare ecosystem in a room together and allow us to discuss what these problems are, what the best means are of solving them, and then helping those companies that need to solve them to do so. So that's what the Healthcare Impact Investing Partnership is all about. And our summit on July 13th is our kickoff event for that partnership. We're proud to say that we have many partners already signed up. We are always looking for more. They range across state organizations, incubators, investors, medical associations, insurers, healthcare systems. These are the people that need to be sitting in the room together to together talk about solving these problems. Much like Steve, when we talked about the legislation, it was so important to have doctors involved with the writing of that legislation and the writing of new regulations. All of the stakeholders need to be talking about how to solve this, or else you get unidirectional solutions. It just doesn't work. So that's what we're here to do.
Hey, Steve, maybe just tie that comment that Mike made into, as he indicated, both the listeners of the Innovation for Alpha podcast, the AngelMD community, and attendees at this summit will be varied. But let's focus in a little bit on investors first and foremost. That can include family offices, high net worth individuals. Secondly, clinicians. We'll have a lot of clinicians that listen to this and pay attention. And there can be others. So as you think about what you need, like what will help the company, and it doesn't have to be necessarily in rank order, but what are the things that come to mind if somebody listening to this said, this sounds really interesting, I'd like to help Steve out in some way. What are those things?
Sure. I would suggest three things to start. The first is continued bridge funding. Always important for a startup to provide that additional runway as we're getting these initial implementations up. Because part of our some of our initial customers are pilots that won't be paying initially for the software. That will only be kicking in after sort of mutually agreed upon period of performance and satisfaction with the software. So providing for that extra one runway is critical to ensure that that this offering moves forward and that patients and clinicians will have access to it. The second would be for any clinician that is involved with a system that runs on the Epic platform, we'd love to speak with you. It is a relatively streamlined download from the Epic App Store. This is a solution that clinicians, whether it's OB nurses, nurse midwives, obstetricians, look at and they say, gosh, this would have been so useful. Can I have that solution today? Actually, could I have had it yesterday? So anyone that runs that and is on Epic, we'd love to talk with you. The third would be we're always looking to both improve and conduct research on our product. So any partners that are interested in conducting research that would look at how the software performs against certain clinical outcomes. Does it shorten the time to treatment for certain conditions? Does it improve awareness of certain conditions? Does it deliver better clinical outcomes? Continues to build the business case for our solution and the evidence base to support it.
We'll put all your contact information in the show notes for anybody that's interested in connecting with Steve, and certainly we can help to facilitate that as well. I'm curious, though, just one little technical point. You mentioned Epic and that the system is on Epic right now, and as a startup, you've got limited resources and time. What are your thoughts down the road about expanding to Cerner, et cetera?
Oh, we'd love to work with Cerner. We had already started work building out our solution in their app store and had to pause temporarily just because, as you said, we're a startup with limited resources, and we were finding that the majority of our initial clients that were in the pipeline were running on Epic. So we decided to focus there, but absolutely there are a number of hospitals out there that run on Cerner, and our goal is to make it available to them too.
That's great. And you know, we would love to also, after you get through, you know, one or two of these next implementations, maybe do a follow-up and talk about, you know, what was learned and even some early wins, just to showcase how this is, you know, really improving things and, you know, anything you're learning in the process, both as an entrepreneur, as well as just, you know, sort of the impact of this.
Wonderful. We'd love to continue that that conversation with you and your network.
Mike, any follow-up final thoughts, questions you want to throw to Steve?
No follow-ups. I'm just, in my head, what I'm really thinking about is, what is the impact if more of this data is collected in real time across more patients? And what could that do to the overall outcome of the entire healthcare system? And that ties back into this concept again of how do we go get this interview with Epic and talk to them about what it is that gives them the ability to improve education about implementation in this? Or does training have to go back to the hospital systems themselves? Again, everything about impact investing, everything about the social impact outcome here is, how do we actually solve the other parts of the system that are creating hurdles? This is beyond just delivery of care to minority populations or to rural populations. This is about adoption of new technology and adoptions of solutions that exist. So I think that is the one takeaway that I keep coming back to with a lot of these conversations, and I look forward to working on that in the future.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things I've learned, Steve, is just the numbers you were talking about at the beginning. It's astounding to me that as a, you know, a developed country that we're in statistically so low in terms of outcomes here, it seems like a perfect opportunity. And I'm seeing, you know, other people are connecting those dots and with obstetric and early stage fetal products. I've just recently seen companies that are raising, you know, significant amounts of money. So it tells me people are paying attention, but it seems like timing couldn't be better for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's the future, right? You know, sort of like, you know, pregnant moms and their babies. That's, you know, that's our future. So we got
to take definition care of, right? As Tobin likes to say, the first dollar and the last dollar I ever spent on you. So there you go.
That's right.
All right.
Well, Steve, we'll end it there for today. Thanks a ton for spending time. We love what you're up to. Keep up the great work. And as always, let us know how we can be helpful along the journey, both ourselves as well as our community. And congratulations on the success so far.
Thank you so much and look forward to continuing to partner with you all.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.